to how early?
I think we were at just finishing up Cranbrook.
Cranbrook, yeah.
And heading out toward Oklahoma.
Well, Cranbrook was kind of a kind of a growing up place for me. It was a good advanced studies in architecture. And they left you alone. Saturn was just wonderful in terms of criticism, and I learned a lot from him. He nailed the problem right away on the student's project, mm-hmm. except mine. He misinterpreted. And it dawned on me that I'm the one that was too rigid.
Is that right?
I'm not opening up to it. And if I looked at it from an open mind, it'd be just as logical. He cut right down to the problem with most students' problem, recognized what it was that he was doing, where the mistakes were, how to compensate for that. And he gave kind of an outline. I agreed with everything he had to say.
Yeah.
Except when it comes to my problem, he misunderstood it completely. Until that dawned on me that I'm the one that was kind of too rigid, not opening to new thoughts. But that's the way Saturn was. I guess he spoke his mind and didn't say much, but when he did, it was worth listening to.
Mm-hmm.
I found that out after about two, three months. But he was able to do that. I had classmates that were pretty good, and you don't say too much to your fellow classmates. Well, I guess you do every now and then, but they never listen to you anyway.
Yeah.
But Sandra was able to cut through all that mishmash to tell you to identify the problem, declare, and then offer solutions. One, two, or three. And I like the way you approach that.
Right. Were your, was it a competitive environment with your classmates?
It wasn't really competitive, but it becomes that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly when you're entering competition.
Yeah.
Most of the time we're working on different projects.
Right.
City plan for Oak Park, and so on and on, and others would be in Texas or somewhere else.
I see.
Their projects were different. But they make some assumptions. Some of it's wrong, and Sandra was able to identify that. I admired him for that. He didn't mince words.
Yeah.
I guess his teaching was all based on that. Architecture, I'm sorry to say, I was not involved with architecture there. And that was one of my frustrations and reason for leaving. I wanted to work in the architectural office.
Yeah.
But that was full. They had room in the planning office, and I was very much needed there.
Yeah. Did Cernan groom his students to move into his office, or was he?
No, I wouldn't say that. Because they all came through, and eventually a lot of them wanted to work for him. But, he just didn't have the opening. He didn't have that big an office. And kids in the design, we'd mix with them quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
They learned from each other too. That was one thing good about the school. Very outspoken bunch of kids.
Yeah.
So it gave you an idea of the kind of office you wanted to run yourself. We did quite a bit of travel.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Kansas City was an interesting move.
Yeah.
We were all kind of, quote, designers. We thought we were designers.
Right.
And as long as we had four projects, to keep four designers going, no problem. But when you had three projects, and two of them had to work together on the project, then we had problems. Yeah, you spend a lot of time talking about it.
Yeah.
And not doing it. And it was a waste of time sometimes.
Really?
You have so much time. Unless somebody has veto power, we didn't institute that. Just kind of talked about it. And then you're arguing principle rather than issues.
Right.
But
these were some of the same guys from the Chicago competition.
No.
No?
No, Terry was the only one that came along.
Okay.
Terry. I said, how'd you get the name Terry? I don't know. Walter. This is the os end of my middle moniker, which is a Walter.
Oh, I see.
Walter Terry. He was the only son of a South African engineer. And practiced like a gentleman.
Yeah.
I think he went to the AA school in London.
Oh, yeah. So at some point you worked for SOM, and I'm trying to figure out when that was.
Well, that was one of those summer jobs in between.
I see.
Yeah. I think it was between my next to last year, going from senior to... Well, I spent five and a half years there at Cranbrook.
Yeah.
So it was between five and five and a half.
Hmm.
3 months. And we had a lot of guys working there that you might know of. George Ansel Vickius.
Hmm.
He was at Washington University.
Oh, is that?
He was dean of dean of architecture at Washington University after Lawrence Hill. And before, who took over? Weiss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a woman named Weiss. What was her first name? Anyway, George Ansel Vickius was the dean there. And I knew him. We worked together in Skidmore's in Chicago. He always bore the brunt of all practical jokes.
Is that right?
Your lunchtime bag, green onions, put a paper clip through the head, and put a U shape and put it on as a clip here, and you have an onion tail. Put his coat jacket on, you know, just a tail hanging out.
Right.
You go take a bus home. But well, that was a nice firm, nice way to work, but. It wasn't that competitive. It wasn't that much that you could learn. Well, I didn't.
Yeah.
A
rather large firm at that time.
Yeah, very large, and you were assigned projects. We were assigned to military design, prototypical design for post office or BOQs or different projects that they'd think up for the military.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have very good designs, but they'd always come back with a comment or two, invariably, no matter what you did. So we prepared for that. We designed a building, have a basement, but no stairs going down. So it suggests stairs going to the basement. And I wanted more. So those were the harmless kind of criticism we got back from the Army. They'd always point out the obvious. And
yeah.
But I stayed there for three months, and it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. A lot of camaraderie, new designers. And that was a very compartmented office, too, because mm-hmm. they had this design section and the production system, the different phases of architecture broken apart and set up that way. So,
yeah.
So as a designer, you didn't get to follow through on some of your buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Just went to another department. I didn't. I think that was too good.
It was a real production shop.
It was production. Mm-hmm. I could put my mind to it, and one day, one 8-hour project, you could do better than one project, one design project.
Really?
If you're doing a PX or... chapel or whatever you're designing, it didn't take that long to design it and come up. It's almost like a sketch problem.
Right.
And you file it, put it, send it off, wait for them to come back with them. And then you have a lot of time to kill, because there's... So after we make our submittal on design, we have this waiting period, and we work on other projects, but at the same time, when the new project, when the project come back with comment, it's easy enough to make the changes. But you know, I was able to do those things, all one and a half. If it's just making corrections, you can do two a day.
Mm-hmm.
It might not even take that. But you pace yourself. That's one thing wrong about a big office like that. You just can't work efficiently because you become a scab. You know, everybody else has a certain schedule and a rhythm going.
Right.
And you're way ahead of that. It doesn't take that long to do it, but you learn to pace yourself and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was big enough an office that we'd have different ideas, different causes to root for.
Yeah.
And that part was fun.
Did you have any ideas that you would stay there longer than the summer?
No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't think so. I knew it was a short time.
Yeah.
They paid well.
Of course.
Yeah. Anyway, from there to teaching was an easy jump.
Yeah.
We got into teaching and I was surprised at the, what was expected. It was very short, you know, your contact hours, your lab is 3 hours long,
mm-hmm.
and we met three times a week, I guess.
Yeah.
12 hours contact. But, and I don't know whether I was there all the time, 12 hours. Probably not, because I found myself with a lot of spare time. And what to do with those time was a problem. I was doing my own sketch problems, but until I got commissioned. The first commission at, I didn't do anything at Oklahoma.
It was a short stay there.
Yeah, I was there a little over a year.
Yeah.
And most of the time I was working in Kansas City then.
Right.
Yeah, I was in Kansas City in a partnership before. And we had some nice commission. We did a house for Jim Clark,
mm-hmm.
And then we did the Kansas City Art Institute, did a couple of three buildings there, sculpture, painting studio, and life drawing, drawing studio, and those buildings we designed. We did the working drawings, and most of it was built. Yeah. We built it. I saw it get built.
Yeah.
Now that's a period of a year and a half.
And you were still in your early 20s at that time?
I'll give you the exact, what was that, 40. 41, 42, 44, 45, 45, 46. Yeah, I was in my 20s, mid
20s. That's a substantial project for someone in their 20s.
It was for me.
Yeah.
But we did well. We got publicized in Progressive Architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Creighton was the editor, and he came by and loved our buildings, and he kind of stood by us and pushed it through.
I think you also designed a health clinic, possibly, with that office.
Yeah, that part of the same.
Yeah.
Nestle Road, I don't know, there's a whole bunch of doctors together.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we had jobs, that we had no problem. But, when we had to work together, we spent too much time talking about it, you know.
Yeah.
You get philosophical, and then the issue's not that big, but you want to win your point. So you argue through to...
Sure.
And that kind of felt dumb. But that's when my draft board came up. They were very obstinate then. They're determined I was going to serve.
Mm-hmm.
They said they bent over backwards and let me get out of school, and because school was... War was over. I didn't let them know. I didn't volunteer. So when they called me, I was it. I was going to report to Leavenworth.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I did was beg for 30 days to close my business connection, which they did, which was wonderful because draft was over by then. War was over.
That's
long gone.
That 30 days bought you the right amount of time.
Yeah, that was the right. That's how I met Henry, bootlegging in North Oklahoma.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, because in Kansas City, our friend said, she said, you're going to Kansas and Oklahoma. Says, you've financed your trip. You'd have a hell of a time taking some liquor and selling it to the bootlegger, Sam Safransky. I never forget that name, but I never met him.
Yeah.
But he was off in Europe when we got to Oklahoma City. He was, I don't know, on a vacation, I guess.
Yeah.
So we're stuck with this case of whiskey, which we're determined not to bring back to Kansas City, or we'll be the laughing stock there. And we try to peddle it. Says, well, the thing to do is to go to the frats. They're always drinking and looking for booze, but we didn't know what the climate was.
Yeah.
It was scared silly when we had to approach these frats. And we practiced, but couldn't do it.
So the whole state was dry then?
Yeah, state of Kansas and state of Oklahoma. You couldn't get a drink. No bars. Oh, they didn't have bars.
Yeah.
Sold 3.2 beer. That's all they sold, beer. But you could get beer, but you couldn't get liquor. And that's what we were peddling. And when we gave our talk in to Oklahoma students, Henry was nice enough to move us into his guest room. And that's when we said, let's give him a bottle each of Kinsey's whiskey and Scotch-type whiskey. Scotch-type, I don't know, that wasn't a good whiskey.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what a boozer he was. I sold him the whole thing. But he was doing kind of interesting work. He had a carport, house design. It was a 4x12 hanging up. Maybe it was more than 4x14s.
Mm-hmm.
It was anchored at the front. You just can't leave it out like this, and you drove your car right in.
Mm.
No post or anything.
No side posts.
Yeah. But, you know, there's wind there.
Yeah, of course.
But it stood up. It didn't have any problem. It was anchored way up front and can't leave it out.
Uh-huh.
And that I remember. And the house was fairly modern.
Was this his house in Oklahoma?
Yeah, one he built for himself.
Yeah.
He lived in it with Mabel. And I don't know what the guest room was like. I stayed there. But, and that's when he said, well, you seem to enjoy lecturing, so why don't you come and teach a lab? And offered me a job. So I took that on. Terry Wall got a similar deal at Kansas in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
And went there. But when Henry got this job offer at North Carolina State, the stipulation he had was that he'd be able to set some of the terms, bring in at least 3-4 of his staff, with him. That's when Fitzgibbon, me, Duncan Stewart, and Terry Wall, we were at a four along with Henry that went there
right.
to set up the school. We were looking for a fifth. We wanted a big name.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to bring, or he was trying to bring Bruce Goff.
Really?
Yeah, well, he was teaching at Oklahoma.
What did you think of Goff and his work?
Well, he was a very, very talented decorator. Well, that's what he was. I mean, he decorated crazy forms.
Oh, yeah.
God, he was crazy. But Henry wanted him in North Carolina, too. Offered him a job. But Bruce didn't want to go there.
He didn't want to leave.
He was happy at North Carolina, at Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, yeah.
He stayed. Then Henry turned on Bruce once he decided that they
Is that right?
Yeah, wasn't an affable parting at all.
So did you guys ever get a fifth?
Well, the fifth was Nowitzki.
Nowitzki, right.
Yeah, he came to North Carolina as a result of Lewis Mumford. He said, big historian at that time,
sure.
And knew the Nowitzkis, Shasha and they were young too. They were in their 30s. I don't think Matthew was quite 40 yet,
right.
But he was a chairman of the department. His fear set up with him, and he taught his fear. We had Hugo Leipziger. He was from Texas. And he taught fourth year. And Fitzgibbon taught third year. And I taught second year. I was in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we had four or five sections.
It's a lot.
Different labs, yeah. But that we were the editing group. And Shasha was in charge of first year with Duncan Stewart. They set up the abstract design first year
right.
Design courses. Second year was really the first year of architecture work.
Sure.
And with five sections we could break it up. But we had common problems. Worked on the project, and then we'd have a common jury.
Mm.
And so we could edit out a lot of students.
Yeah, maybe what we refer to today as weeding out the students.
Yeah, that was a function of the second year class.
Yeah.
And I move on maybe 30 students on to Fitzgibbon.
Out of how many?
Oh, we start out maybe 100.
Oh, gosh.
Jeez. 100 students. It was a tremendous drop. Every problem we'd have a few drops.
Hmm.
And that was expected, you know.
Yeah.
Now, if they dropped out of out of the major into some other thing, we gave them a better grade. Yeah, because you know, it doesn't reflect on architecture.
Sure.
But if they're going to stay on, it would influence architecture. And I thought it would be graded straight.
Yeah.
But we're a little more lenient if they dropped out. So.
I see.
Kids find that out very shortly, quickly. And after every project, we'd have dropouts.
Yeah. Did you have other instructors teaching under you for those different sections?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I had four others helping me.
I see.
Larry Ellison taught a section.
Uh-huh.
Lee Hodgson, Walt Weissman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who the fourth one was. Was Terry in that? No. And I was in charge of a thing,
mm-hmm.
although I was outranked by Innocent.
Hmm.
He was a full prof.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he was that guy in landscape architecture.
He was a holdover. He was already at NC State.
Yeah, he was there from before.
I see.
He had tenure. He couldn't get rid of him.
Yeah.
But he finally went back to Nebraska.
Hmm.
Yeah, one of Joe Thurlow's doing. But it was a fun time. A lot of work. Kids never worked so that hard. They never knew about it.
But, yeah.
We had football players signed up there. Football and other athletes, basketball players.
Mm-hmm.
And you outlined, of course, and they were worried because of the Saturday sketch problem. Four of those. Didn't even know how they're going to do that. We have football then. As well as time you chose between football and basketball, which is true, but it was a cruel thing to say when they played there on a football scholarship. So they dropped out. And you're a little more generous with a grade when they drop out. You don't grade them too brutally. That was a tough time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was a disciplinarian. I liked the idea that you understood all the little details, so out of the details would come something big.
Right.
Fiskum was the other way, right? Right. You got something big, go bam, and then little things fall into place.
The big ideas, yeah.
So it was a good contrast.
Yeah.
And the fourth year was the more back to fundamentals. And fifth year was kind of a very, very nice design. Kind of conceptual things.
Yeah.
But Matthew Novitsky was leading that group, and we'd have a lot of faculty meetings. It was a fun time because we didn't know ourselves which way we were going.
Yeah,
I was always surprised at the projects that we give and the results we get from the students. They did different things, and we had to refine the projects and the terms. They got these great big timber for, main support. Then you solved all the problems. We have lean to the rafters. And you got all kind of space underneath.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, how do you move something like that?
Right.
Yeah. So we have to pin them down on a lot of that kind of thing. How do you move it? Moving was the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Once it knocked it down, cut it down. Or stone, they have these big stone lintels.
Right.
They estimate the weight of that, it's about 900 pounds. Well, how are you going to move 900 pounds and lift it up? Well, a little research, a little projects, and then come up with pulley system or different ways of doing it, or abandon the idea completely.
Yeah.
That was kind of a fun time. We did this, what we call primitive shelter.
Hmm.
You're there with your wife, or wife and child, son.
Yeah.
Just maybe the two of you trying to put together a project.
Oh, I see.
Construction. And designing was easy. But then how long is this timber? How about the bending problem? How do you lift it up into place? How do you secure it? All of that, we begin to question. And hell, we didn't think about the project at all until we got in with the students, and then all these questions come up.
Right.
Well, we knew that we had to solve a lot. So some we could, and others we solved beautifully, imaginatively. But out of that came some very free architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Free in the sense that there was no preconception of what the building's going to look like or what material they're going to build it out of. Some didn't have any timber, so they had to improvise catenary ropes and cables that they weave together.
Right.
And the proof of the pudding was building a model, 1-inch or half-inch scale model. So each one had a big, big model of a structure. And you could test it by sitting on it. Oh, there's no lateral bracing here, this kind of thing. But it was a fun time. And we had the time to devote to it because nobody was practicing. We just didn't have practice then.
Yeah.
But that was North Carolina the first year.
Mm.
And we edited the class down. Out of this, we did edit. And we had good students left over. Fred Taylor, I think, was in mm-hmm. the first class. Mm-hmm. Bob Burns. Hell of a lot of nice students that were left over. They survived, of course.
It must have been difficult for them going from the previous school.
Well, I don't know. I suppose it was different. It was certainly different. They worked the fanny off.
Yeah.
But they enjoyed it. It was kind of religion for them, you know, how hard, look how hard I'm working now. But we soon got the reputation as being a tough school to get into, so we didn't have quite the applicant load that we had in the first year or two. Less students, but better students.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't weed out as strongly, but still we had about 70, 80 students.
Right.
And we still cut it down to about 20. So we had a good mortality rate. We worked on that. I gave them a planning project too, you know.
Oh, really? In second year?
Second year.
Hmm.
Yeah, we take a neighborhood and design it free. You know, maybe if it's like Carolina between Glenwood and St. Mary's and Glencourt and Oberlin, let's assume that's just completely free. You
know? Right.
No roads, nothing. And you just have the contour map mm-hmm. and the bounding roads, and then start from there and put in the neighborhood.
Right.
And that was fun. The kids spent a lot of time building the model, putting in the roads.
Yeah.
And then from there, what do they do? Where is the center? Where's the heart? What's the theme of the thing? How do you circulate? Is it shopping center here? How do you move? You know, you get a lot of principles across.
Sure.
And that was about almost a full semester project. But I enjoyed doing that. And, you know, the model was always nice.
Yeah.
And got a lot of stimulation going. But that's the only time we really entered into planning as a project.
Mm-hmm.
Then what else did we give? Well, that and typical firehouse, chapel, that kind of project, school, elementary school.
So when did you start your practice in North Carolina?
Well, the first year I did get this job, Richter.
Yeah.
What was the name of it?
Richter House.
Yeah, Richter. I remember the wife, June Richter.
Yeah.
And,
is that the one in Southern Pines?
No, that's right in Raleigh on Churchill Road.
Right.
Churchill. God damn. Doesn't matter. They lived in it for a couple of years and then he went on to Oregon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he kept teaching. I think he was an entomologist.
Hmm.
Yeah, he taught me a lot about bugs.
Hopefully not about termites.
Yes. Termites. I'm concerned.
Oh yeah.
That's a very, very prevalent in Carolina.
It sure is.
Yeah. What the hell is it? Richard Paul? Paul Richard?
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, so that was about 1950, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 48, 49, 50, yeah, it's good. So those are really the first house I did from A to Z myself.
Yeah.
From design concept to working drawing to construction administration. And I was lucky that I ran into Frank Walser.
He's the builder.
Yeah. Yeah, just a meticulous, fussy old guy.
Yeah.
Well, he was younger than I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe my age. Yeah. nice wife, Ellen.
So it was probably important for you then to have somebody who understood your work and could build it.
Yeah, very sympathetic.
Yeah.
And follow the detail very, very closely.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he'd tell me, this is difficult to do, let's try something else.
Mm-hmm.
But, that didn't happen too often.
Yeah.
But I learned from him as well as he from me. Two-way street.
Yeah. Did that, your relationship with him, that help your work be more efficient because you knew that he could build what you were drawing?
Well, he understood what I was building. Mm-hmm. I put down on paper and how to put it together. And that was very gratifying.
Yeah.
There weren't too many other contractors that way because they're used to that ornate molding and the floors where they did their butchery. They covered up with these little scallops and finials and but you take all that out and you gotta detail a little more carefully.
Right.
And the detail counts. It becomes part of the aesthetics. But it wasn't thought that way. It was always design what you want and scallops or finials or dentils or whatever you want to call these things. And you covered it up.
Yeah.
So it was no matter what it was, the details covered it up and you didn't know what was behind that, how it was built. And it didn't matter to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the environment in which we started. And the contractor, like Frank Walser, was very sympathetic to the idea. He was proud of what he was doing.
Really?
And the way he put things together. And sure, you didn't want to cover it up if you didn't have to.
Yeah.
And most of the time, we exposed a lot of these things.
And many of your houses exposed structure through post and beam?
Yeah, a lot of it. And it's minimal, you know. When you say minimal construction, it takes a good contractor to put together minimal construction.
Because
you can't cover it up. There's no way of camouflaging what you don't have. Well, that was my introduction to residential architecture. And I was lucky. Richard was very sympathetic. I spent a lot of time with him, and he was flexible enough to go along with many of what I wanted to do. Because I think he was from Oregon, anyway. So he was kind of sympathetic with what I wanted to do. And then Greg Poole was the other one.
Right.
I worked on his house, Lake House. On Poole Road at the same time. And he was a tough one. It's okay, Matsumoto, we go back to the A-frame. That's 3 months of working them down to what I wanted to do. So now know how you, and we will go back and give it on one point.
Yeah. So you probably had all kinds of things like that to overcome with your projects.
Well, with Poole, it was kind of on the gloves.
Yeah.
But he was a fun guy. And I don't know where he made his money, but he had money.
Yeah. Well, his equipment sales, I'm sure, made some
money. Well, no, that came later. He was not in equipment sales originally.
Huh.
Greg Poole.
Yeah. I read somewhere that house, the lake house, had a pool of water on the roof.
That's right.
How did you accomplish that?
Well, that's easy because, you know, we had an absolutely flat roof. You could build a little higher on the edges.
A little parapet or something.
So you have a pond and the water. And you have two outlets. One with the cap on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the water pipe is that high.
I see.
So that when the water level comes up at that point, it all overflows and goes. When you hear the water coming down the drain, you turn off the supply.
I see.
Yeah, and if it rains, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Now, to kill the mosquito, you drain the whole roof. And we had another roof drain here that completely drained the.
I see, so a double drain system.
So you open a valve there, then you drain the roof completely. So you could drain it completely.
Did that drain internally through piping in the house?
Inside the house. Wow. Down through the back room and out.
Was that a common technique at that time?
No, it's just kind of a logical thing that developed, you know.
Yeah.
First you do a house, well, how do you keep water? Very easy, you just prop it up and you always have water there. What do you do with the mosquitoes? One question led to another solution. So we kept some water there, and the roof was kind of stronger than normal to carry that extra weight. We figured it was about 10 pounds a square foot.
Yeah.
Not much, but over the entire roof it was.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But that's a very simple house.
Mm-hmm.
All he wanted was a double bedroom
mm-hmm.
where he and his wife could spend the night. It was only about, 15, 20 minutes from Raleigh?
Really close.
And it was nice. He had a fish pond, a pond that he had just made, stocked with largemouth bass.
Mm.
And we used to fish for that.
Mm. They made for nice site visits, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you also went on to do his house in Country Club Hills.
Yeah, that was much later. Yeah. And then his Greg Poole Equipment.
Right.
Yeah, that was a big one. When he got that franchise, he wanted to do it. And there, you know, the flat roof one didn't matter.
Obviously.
Yeah. We didn't keep water on it. We just left it that way.
Yeah.
The idea of the roof water was reflective and evaporation to cool it.
Right.
Yeah, because we didn't have air conditioning then. Well, we did, but I guess it was so expensive that nobody had it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that. In 49, 50, I guess air conditioning was just barely coming into its own.
Yeah.
Because it was right after the war, too. See, the war ended in 45.
Right.
6, 7, 8. So about 3 years later, 3, 4 years later, I kept working on these things. But the wartime was interesting in that there's no construction going on.
Right.
Everything was for the defense effort. No materials, nothing available. Everybody wanting, but not available.
Yeah.
So instead of designing houses, we had competitions, a lot of competitions.
Yeah.
And that was very fair because you submitted your entry and it was judged on its merit.
Right.
And there's no way of they knowing who did what.
So they were done anonymously.
That's right, absolutely. Yeah. The name was covered over.
Yeah.
Or submitted in another piece of paper and kept in a different envelope. So the professional advisor or the jury never knew who belonged to what drawing. Unless you had contact with them, you might have been able to say that, I'm going to put a red X on this drawing.
Right.
If you see that, that's mine. The pre-names, you know. Maybe you could do that way, but short of doing something like that, there's no way.
Yeah.
So the competition was very common, one, because there was nothing being built.
Right.
And everybody wanting housing and thinking about it. So there was a hunger for this and a desire for people to want to look at it. So, you know, you had a house design competition and you might have 2,000 entries.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, you just don't hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of those, the, which one was it? We had over 2,000 entries. 2,700 something, 2,700. Mm. And they gave four regional prizes. First, you know, northeast, northwest, southeast, southwest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they divide the United States into four quadrants. And you had first prize for each of the sections.
I see. And you won for first prize.
Yeah, I won one of those.
Oh, that's fantastic.
First. And then they just the whole thing together and then I thought I had so little chance, or none at all, that I didn't spend much time at it. That's the excuse I have now. I submitted it, and that's it. And forgot about it. And when I won, I was surprised as anyone else. But I did win the national, the four put together was third prize.
Third prize, yeah. So I guess you became pretty well known for being a small house expert.
Yeah. That's how I made my reputation.
Yeah.
Because Oakland Tribune used to have an annual competition.
Oh, really?
Of designing houses.
Huh.
And we used to enter that regularly. And we'd be premiated. And at those times, even a $100 prize was significant.
Sure.
$100 meant something then. So when you win $1,000, it's a lot of money in the 40s. And it was the 40s then.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of money.
Yeah.
Did you involve your students in these competitions as well?
One or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did get into. We said we'll work on the competition. They wanted to do this.
Yeah.
Work competition because they thought it'd be nice to do something on their own.
Sure.
And they really put in a lot of time and effort. And I thought the morale was good.
Yeah.
So the only thing I want is I don't want you guys to be working like this.
Uh-huh.
I want you to talk projects and pretty each other's projects.
Right. Don't keep it secret.
Yes. Yeah. Objectively, if you can talk about it, pretty each other, it's worth doing.
Yeah.
But if you're going to work secluded like that, do it on your own. You don't need the class to do it. So they all agreed. There's a one thing that would control on this is the prize money. If you won one of the premiated prizes, you keep 10%.
Oh.
The rest you throw into the kitty. And the faculty decides how it's going to get
done. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all agreed to it.
Yeah?
They all agreed to it. So that's how we did it. Some crazy formula. But
what would you guys do with the money? If it came to you?
Oh, we divvy it up.
I see.
We divvy it up according to what we thought was fair.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there might be $400 or $500 prizes or $70 here. So. And we did pretty well.
Yeah.
The trouble is, again, I don't think this ought to go into the paper.
Yeah.
But Mabel Carpenter was a pain in the ass.
Really?
She'd always say, George, you hear anything yet? What do you mean, hear anything? He said, well, aren't they judging the competition today or tomorrow? Good God. I said, this is just a shot in the dark. Everybody's trying it. And you enter these things, do the best you can, and forget.
Right.
And if you can't forget it, forget it. Don't mess with it. But Mabel was bad.
Really?
Either that or Henry put her up to it.
Could be.
Yeah. You hear anything yet? And I said, I took all the fun out of entering these things because there was an expectation.
Sure.
And a pressure that I didn't enjoy. Then I said, well, no more competition. I'm not going to enter it for me. So I stopped doing that, doing competitions in the early 50s.
That's about the time you started designing your own house, though.
Yeah. Well, I got married in 51.
Right.
1951, and I guess built that thing in 53, 4, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took kind of a nerve to do it. You know?
I'm sure.
just getting a paying job and commit yourself to a house and... But I had saved enough to do it. I was very conservative.
Yeah.
Had enough money to put down a good down payment, a small mortgage, which we paid back in advance. You know, we did.
No,
really? Yeah, we paid the house up in no time.
Because
I had a double income.
I see.
You know, I had my practice, with no overhead, almost no overhead.
Yeah.
Teaching, and Henry was very generous. I spent the minimum time as an assistant prof, an associate prof, and as a full professor.
You advanced quickly.
Yeah, very quickly.
Time.
Yeah, 3 years as an assistant, 5 as an associate, and then from then I was a full prof.
Mm-hmm.
And I was advanced ahead of some guys that maybe he earned it, merited more than I did.
Is that right?
I was winning competitions and getting published, which Henry liked.
Oh, yeah. Well, you were getting published, it seemed, on a regular basis.
Yeah, I hit the formula.
Yeah.
And I didn't know got to know the editors real well, Tom Creighton, Doug Haskell, and Frank Lopez. As a Progressive Architecture, Architectural Record, and Architectural Forum.
Right.
So those are the three major architectural magazines. Arts and Architecture, I never did fool with them.
It was a California magazine?
That was California, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was out of the realm, so I don't know too much about California.
Well, you were doing on the East Coast what they were trying to put forth on the West Coast, right?
Yeah, it was an entirely different
direction.
But it was a nice time, except for Mabel. I used to avoid her.
Yeah.
But then she'd always find out. And fortunately, I was able to tell her that, you know, sometimes I won't.
Yeah. It's always good to be able to say you won, I guess.
Yeah. But Henry was a great believer in competition.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do that as much now. They just don't like the idea of outside jury telling you what to do or what not.
Right, right.
Which is true.
Yeah.
I mean, you're teaching one thing, and you don't have control when an outside jury comes out and decide how they're going to premiate it.
Undercuts your opinions.
Yeah.
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 Can you tell me about the ideals that you took toward designing houses? Some of them are pretty clear, you know, exposing the structure. Keeping form simple and plans very clear.
Well, it wasn't the idea of exposing structure per se,
mm-hmm.
but using material as it delivered to you.
Right.
With least amount of tooling. And using materials that required very little tooling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a lot of materials that come, you know, but it involves a lot of labor. For instance, shingles.
Yeah.
It's such a small unit that there's a lot of work involved in shaping it. You wanted to shape the building using it's the Japanese idea of a 20-panel room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
20-panel room is 18, 12, 36. It's a pretty big house, 20-panel room. Yeah, it's 3,600 feet. 3,600 feet. 10-panel room would be 18 times 10. 18 is by, 3 feet by 6 feet.
Yeah.
18 feet. And if it's 10 panels, that's 10 times 18, 100. Is that 180? Is that all? 180?
I think maybe. My math is not good.
18 times 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 180. It's a good room. 180 square feet.
Yeah.
So a 20 panel room would be 360. So to be a house, you'd have maybe, let's say, a 50 panel house. 50 panel. 50 into 18. 9,000. 9,000 square feet? That's too big a house.
Yeah, that's too big.
Well, anyway, that's the way you'd figure it.
Yeah.
And then you got to have so many solid panels, stucco exterior or tile exterior,
mm-hmm.
tile care.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that simple, but that's the way you like to think that you could beat the cost. Right. Is everybody doing something? And then it's a matter of site assembly, you know, for what you have. Assembly out of a catalog that gives you the material. And I try doing that. The time I think I succeeded or felt closer to success was at Douglas Fir Plywood.
Right.
A panel house. And there we counted up the material. It was $1,500.
Really?
It was under $1,500.
Amazing.
Well, it was in those days when things weren't that expensive. And I don't know what we paid for our plumbing fixtures or heating, but that was all included in the cost of the raw material. And we tried to build it and use material with the least amount of tooling.
Mm-hmm.
You bought timber, 4 by 12s, 18 feet long, and they form certain functions. And you don't tool, you don't cut it, you just use it the way it comes.
Yeah.
It's a site assembly.
I see.
That was the idea. And we were trying to get some richness out of it. You know, like the stairs would come down and then go up again, and then you have a natural V.
Right.
And a table, and you have a place where you can sit with, maybe six people, three, where you could eat there. There are a lot of things that you could develop that way, and it was fun. And actually, we were able to build it that way, so it was even more fun.
You did several houses that we might call demonstration houses with Westinghouse, with GE.
Yeah, but those were more or less stud construction,
mm-hmm.
where you had an inside wall and an outside wall.
Right.
So assembly, it wasn't a site assembly anymore. It was it was put together. You had to tool the material and fit it in. So I was building pretty much the way we build today, still.
Right.
And that's the way we build. I wish there was a way of building, you know, material just comes, attach it.
Yeah. But, more site assembly than site construction.
Yeah, no. You take the saw and the hammer away from the outside carpenters, and just assemble it as it comes. Then I think you're getting costs down.
Yeah. But with the plywood house, you said that there was some coating on the plywood that allowed it to be finished material.
Yeah, that's a overlay, plastic rosin overlay.
Uh-huh.
I think it's still available.
Yeah. Was this liquid applied? Is that
No. It was like a thin veneer. Veneer. It was smooth then, you know.
I see.
It was a wonderful painting base.
Hmm.
You can finish and paint it any color you want.
Yeah.
Now, they're painting you had to paint. there was. I wish we had that here.
Yeah.
It'd be a nice cabin to have. But, well, that was up to Carolina.
Yeah.
And then from there I started to have an office. I shared offices with Fitzgibbon for a long time.
Oh, did you? At the school or this?
At school.
Right.
God, he was a nice guy. I really liked him. Big thinker.
Yeah.
And he always has these nice big commission. And I was known as a small house architect.
And he got the big houses.
Yeah, he got the big ones. Good sense of humor.
Yeah.
Now I'm still single then. When we're working like that.
Yeah.
I was single till pretty late. I was 23 when I got 20. No, not 24, 29. 29? 29. When I got married, yeah. Hmm. 51. Yeah, 29.
Were you married out here in San Francisco? Or
Chicago.
Chicago, really?
Yeah, Kimi lived in San Francisco and I was in Raleigh.
So you met halfway.
Halfway. My folks were in Chicago then. See.
Did they move to Chicago, your folks?
Well, they moved there from Kent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was still during the war when they moved out. 44, 45. Yeah. Yeah, they moved there and Dad didn't want to move. He wanted to see work on his irrigation project.
Mm-hmm.
The mother got after him. Mm. And so he worked at Donnelly Press. Donnelly Printing Press.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
First time he did manual work. For a living. And mother worked for the first time in her life at a what do you call it, one of those places where you sew dresses,
yeah, in a tailor shop.
Well, it wasn't tailor because it was all custom, it was for the trade.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
It wasn't custom house, custom design. So they got a taste of industrial production.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting time for them. They came down to Raleigh and couldn't comprehend how I was making a living, but...
Is that right?
It was all right with them.
Yeah.
Didn't understand my house. I thought it was kind of bizarre.
Did they really? Was that a common reaction among folks in Raleigh?
Well, some. I don't know how they thought, but it's still not fully accepted, I don't think. Modern architecture, is it?
No.
It's kind of a minority
right
thinking. So I don't know why we still persist.
Do you think we should?
I don't know. Sometimes you wonder.
Yeah.
What if you just said that you had to design something that fit the mode? I've never tried doing that. But
yeah.
I always had an objective. I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Why do you suppose that you're interested in modern architecture? I mean,
why?
Yeah.
Well, it was logical to me. I wanted to use material the best I knew how, with least amount of tooling or fooling around with it. The more I tooled it, the more I fooled with it, the costlier the house.
Right.
And it made no difference what I did. Even just to cut it in half cost something, somebody something. So I wanted to use material as it came if I could.
Yeah.
And if I couldn't, you would check with industry. Sometimes they'll make it for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make it available. Like a lot of these panels that I used were 7 feet by 4.
Yeah.
Instead of 8 by 4.
Is that right?
And they gave me a good price. Cut down on the labor. So you just cut the material.
Yeah.
Size you want, 4 by 7, and up the one.
Now, there are a lot of your houses that are sort of spaced on an even module.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times that module is put in half for cantilevers over the ends or the edges.
That's an aesthetic decision.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a cantilever to help it express itself a little bit.
Can I ask you about something that's a little less technical about your houses?
Sure.
Well, in their relationship to the site, in a lot of your houses, there are gardens that you capture with architecture by extending a wall out or by pulling a wall underneath the structure. There are views that you reach out to grab, it seems.
Yeah, I guess that's a legitimate thing to do.
Yeah. How important was designing a building for its specific site to you?
I thought it was prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very important. It has to You can't take this house and put it in somewhere else. It just doesn't belong. Yeah, this house is kind of interesting. I took a lot of liberties on this one elevation, because there was the what it was originally was a short deck, cantilever from back here, and then it supported at that point.
Right.
And then it went on about 6 feet. It was a short deck. And after about 30 years, it rotted, and I had to replace it.
Yeah.
That's when I went all the way down.
I see.
And came back up. Then I could take this rotting piece, saw it off, or get to the fresh point and then put a timber on either side and go out. And I said, well, as long as you're doing that, you might as well go fairly out. I got the deck big enough. And I got this room, dining room, that extension. I got a dressing room, too, out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I'm a lot closer to the trees.
Yeah, maybe too close. I know I am. I'm touching it.
Well, it makes a nice space, that's for sure.
Well, I was so lazy, I get it trimmed a little. It needs trimming. Just a year or two and the thing just grows mad here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Shall we call it an afternoon on this one?
Sure.